and drove off into the burgeoning dawn. "Where is home, anyway?" She glanced toward the ostentatious house. "Oh." Woody Woodson appeared in the doorway of said house and waved at me as I turned back to Katrina. "Take Dog and climb into my truck, and I'll find you someplace to stay when I get done here." She called Dog, and the two of them headed toward the bullet as I walked back toward the house. "What's up?" Woody peeled off the plastic gloves, punching them in his shirt pocket where they hung like a dead flower arrangement. "You want the good news or the bad?" "Why not the good?" "We have a positive ID down to prints and blood type." "The bad?" "It's a count." After dropping Katrina off at the Blue Gables at dawn, I swung around to the office and unlocked the door, climbed the steps, careened off the walls to the holding cells, and collapsed on one of the cots as Dog curled up on the floor. In 2 minutes, we were asleep. Or, I exaggerate, and it was 1 1/4. "Late night?" Ruby was always the first in, unless I slept at the office, which I seem to do more and more these days. "Go away. I made coffee, you grouchy old bear." "Okay. I'll leave your mug on my counter to lure you out of your lair." "Okay. Get up, or it'll get cold." "Yes, ma'am." She'd been treating me a lot nicer since giving up on teaching me how to use a computer, something that had severely tested our relationship. Groaning, I rolled up to a sitting position and scrubbed my hands across my face to get some circulation going. Then I gathered my hat from the floor and sat it on my head to capture my wayward hair. Dog was gone, having better recuperative powers than I did, and had evidently joined my dispatcher in the main office. I stood and stretched my broken parts that woke up slower than the other ones, and steadied myself in an attempt to start walking toward coffee, the only thing that would save me from the desperation of coma. When I got there, she had already pulled a stool up for me. I stared at it. She sipped from her own mug, peering at me with the ferocious blue eyes over the lip of her drinkware. "What?" "I might fall off." She reached down and petted Dog. "You'll have to risk it. I'm not hauling a chair in from your office." "Is this going to be a long lecture?" "Maybe. I already had one from the Sheridan County Sheriff last night." I thought about it. Maybe it was this morning. "Sit." "Yes, ma'am." I did as instructed, and then, satisfied I wasn't going to topple over onto her, reached out and took the mug and held it under my face, allowing the steam to help open my eyelids that felt as if somebody had glued them together. At the risk of sounding like an 80s action movie, I think I'm getting a little old for this. She nodded. Surprisingly, among other things, that's the title of today's lecture. I sipped my coffee. "Go ahead." "You were in Sheridan County?" "I was." "Running and shooting?" "No, more like detecting and analyzing." "Well, that's a relief, and certainly more age-appropriate." Nodding, I tried to smile. "I don't usually look this good after a night of running and shooting." She continued to study me. "You were under the mistaken impression that you are looking good this morning?" I shrugged, straightening my shirt that looked as if it had been slept in for a week. "Questionably representable." "Did it ever occur to you to call for some backup from a staff that is considerably younger than you are?" "It was an impromptu situation." "With you, it always is." She lowered her mug. "Did you think of handing this situation over to the proper authorities in Sheridan County?"
"It was discussed."
"And?"
"They didn't want it. Besides, it might pertain to the case I've been working on." Her voice changed tone, and I was pretty sure about 37% of the oxygen had just left the room.
"And which case is that?"
I muttered, "the missing painting."
"Walter,
it's taken a turn."
She sighed, more than audibly.
"In what way?" "Someone may have been murdered."
"You're not thinking Charlie Lee Stillwater?"
"Possibly, but this is someone else."
She sat forward a little. "So who may have been murdered?"
"Philippe Lehman."
"No count?"
I sipped my coffee, the siren song of caffeine whispering to the dormant portion of my reptilian brainstem, Proprieties for the dead, please. Habeas corpus? There's a lot of blood and prints. But nobody? Woody Woodson is working on that. She nodded. He stopped in yesterday with his fishing pole. That turned out to be wishful thinking. On everybody's part. She glanced at the mass of post-its on her own desk, and I casually wondered if she had stock in the company. The grandson, Bass Townsend, is ready to be released from the hospital, but Isaac wanted to just give you a heads up. Do you think we can get Jim over at the Blue Gables to just hold a cabin for us in perpetuity? I sipped my coffee. Did Isaac mention if the patient was capable of driving 2 days back to Los Angeles? He did not. But he's doing better? Apparently. She studied me some more. Isn't that a glimmer of light in this particular part of this wide-reaching investigation? I reflected, which was what she wanted anyway. Here's my line of supposition, and you can correct me if you spot any errors in my logic. Of course. A local veteran dies under questionable conditions and leaves a shoebox containing $1 million worth of unmarked, non-serialized $100 bills, an individual with an impressive layman's interest in not only Western art, but in one piece of artwork in particular, that was destroyed in a fire in a military facility in Texas at a time when and where he happened to be stationed. Okay. A study of said painting is discovered that matches the historic work of art exactly, and after violence is perpetrated, it is stolen. Granted. Further investigation reveals a hidden cubby in the veteran's ransacked room that could have contained said oversized historic painting. A painting no one has actually seen. Granted, but Philippe Lehmann, noted art historian and collector, is discovered missing with prints and an inordinate amount of blood saturating his kitchen floor. But no body. I shrugged. No. So once again, no painting, and also no body. Yes. I drained my coffee cup. There is one aspect you may or may not be aware of. And that is? There is an ex-KGB armbreaker over in the Sheridan jail by the name of Serge Boshirov who might be mixed up in all of this. She looked at me, one tick past incredulous. KGB armbreaker? Ex, well, maybe a head kicker. At least that's why he's in the Sheridan jail. Anyway, my next trip is over there to have a word with him, as long as Carson Brandis and I are still on speaking terms. She sat her mug down. Well, before you go, I have something serious to talk about with you. This hasn't been serious? You need to call your daughter. She could call me. That's not how parenting works, and you know it. She studied me. How long has it been? 17 days, 8 hours, and 43 minutes. Call your daughter. Okay. My turn to study her. Something else? I'm thinking of retiring. I felt my stomach flip. Don't say that. I just did. I'm going to pretend like you didn't. I sat my own mug down. Look, if this is about the computer thing, it's not. Walter, I only have so many years for all this in me, and I need to know if you're going to stand in the next election. Because if you are, I'm going to start training a replacement and then retire. I stared at her. And if I'm not? Then I'll write out the rest of your tenure and assist in the transition of whoever comes in to dispatch for the next sheriff. Meaning Cesar Pretoria. Whoever, I really don't care. I'm just not going to leave all this to the next person that comes in to do the job. I've got another year in me, but I can stretch it to 1.5 if I have to. Either way, you're leaving? Yes. You know, not all good things have to come to an end. Yes, they do. It's the nature of all good things. I don't think I want to be here without you. I'm not even sure I can. I leaned in and took her hand. When the whole computer thing was going on, I was sure you were going to quit. I told Katie, and she said to do whatever it took to make you happy. She's a good girl.
She waited a polite moment before continuing. So, you're not going to stand?
I honestly don't know.
I snorted out something that resembled a laugh. It's not like I haven't been thinking about it myself.
And?
I'm not sure what else I would do. You and I both know that's not a good enough reason to have this job.
Yep.
Well, I looked at the floor. I go up to the home for assisted living and look at Lucian. And I'm not so sure I can do that. I mean, even working full-time, I can barely stay out of Katie's and Lola's hair. I sighed.
Not that that's been a problem lately.
Her voice took on yet another tone.
Why haven't you called her?
I need to tell her about Charlie Lee, but was calling her too much, so I stopped. She shook her head at me.
All or nothing, huh?
Something like that.
Tough guy.
Not at all.
Why don't you take a sabbatical?
I told you I have been. I mean from the job. In case it missed your notice, I was gone for 2 weeks in Mexico a few months ago.
That was hardly a vacation.
You think I need time off?
It's better than just quitting. You could try having some time to yourself and see how it goes.
Her eyes stayed steady on me, but then flicked over my shoulder where I heard someone coming up the steps from the main entrance.
Can I help you?
I turned to see the last person I expected, Lolo Long's little brother, Barrett, who had stopped at the top of the steps and waved.
Hi.
Howdy.
Is there any other way up here?
Ruby and I looked at each other.
What do you mean?
Lonnie is down here, and he wants to come up.
I need a job. I studied the resume and looked up at the chief of the Northern Cheyenne and the little brother of the tribal police chief, figuring there wasn't any way out of this in the political sense. How come you don't work with your sister? He glanced at Lonnie and then back at me.
You're kidding, right?
Yep, I kind of was.
He is a very good boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is so.
Lonnie nodded, and I wondered how old he was. I figured he had to be at least approaching 100.
You sure you want to lose him?
The older man glanced at the younger one and nodded.
He is not a good driver.
With a car?
No, with my wheelchair. He runs me into things.
Barrett interrupted.
Momoto.
The older man looked back at me. He also has trouble keeping his mouth shut, but I don't think that has ever kept anyone from being a police officer. I studied the recommendations, which did not include Lolo. What does your sister think about all this?
Nothing.
She's my sister, not my mother.
You understand, I'd prefer to have good relations with her department.
Me too, but I don't belong to her.
He slumped back in the chair, pushing a handful of thick hair from his face. I've got 2 more semesters, and then I can work full-time.
So we're talking about a part-time job for now?
Weekends, and then the better part of a month during the holidays. You worked security at the tribal headquarters, but you haven't listed your sister as a previous employer. He gestured toward Lonnie.
He was my previous employer.
As I recall, you weren't armed.
No, but I can be.
Not without 6 weeks down at the Law Enforcement Academy in Douglas.
Okay.
The idea that had been evolving in my mind was bubbling to the surface, and I was thinking maybe I could kill 2 birds with 1 stone. How are your radio skills?
My what?
Ever done any dispatching work?
No.
Want to?
No.
Then I can't hire you. The opening I've got is part-time dispatcher on weekends. He looked at the chief, who nodded.
Nothing else?
Nope. He thought about it as he looked at the cardboard Budweiser version of the Adams painting propped up on top of my filing cabinet.
Do I get a uniform?
Sure, if you want one.
A gun?
I shook my head. Not till after the 6 weeks in Douglas.
So 2 semesters working part-time as a dispatcher, and then in the spring you'll send me to the academy and give me a job as a real deputy?
We'll see how you do and then go from there.
Really?
Really. I stood. That gives you 9 months to impress me.
He also stood. Deal.
Not yet.
not till you meet your real boss for the next 9 months. I walked out of my office, and Barrett turned Lonnie's chair and pushed him out after me. Ruby was talking to Vic and Sizer Vittoria, but the conversation broke up when we arrived at her counter. "Ruby, this is Barrett Long. I just hired him as a part-time weekend dispatcher." It was hard to read all the emotions that played across her face, but she entertained an honest smile and held out the second hand that had been offered to him, and they shook. She glanced at me. "Does he know what he's getting into?" "He'll eventually figure it out." Allowing the two to get acquainted, I took the handlebars of Lonnie's wheelchair and moved past the rest of the staff who were waiting at the top of the stairs. "New dispatcher?"
"Yep."
She tilted her head to look past me.
"Since when?"
"Since this morning." "Those are big shoes to fill."
"Yep."
I glanced at Sancho. "Questions?" He held up his hands in compliance.
"Not a one."
Walking past, he introduced himself to Barrett as Vic studied me.
"What about Double Tough?"
"What about him? Isn't it the usual practice to bump the Powder Junction deputy up here and put the low man on the totem pole down there?"
"Yep."
She glanced past me at the young man again.
"He know that?"
I shrugged. "He's got 9 months to find out." She looked down at Lonnie.
"Kind of quiet down there in Powder Junction."
He nodded and smiled.
"Kind of quiet up in Lame Deer, too." "Yes, it is so."
Reaching out, I touched her arm to get her attention. "I'm headed over to Sheraton to talk with the KGB. You can read the file on him as I drive."
"The who?"
"Serge, the armbreaker. Kind of like Ivan the Terrible, but without the charm."
"How can I turn that down?"
I glanced at Lonnie. "Want me to get you out of here?" The chief glanced at his mode of locomotion.
"No, I will wait on him. He is mine until Friday, right?"
"Right." They started down the steps with Vic. Dog didn't join us, but rather had planted himself in front of Barrett and was now getting an ear massage from the new hire. Smiling, I pushed open the door and we walked across the parking lot toward my truck.
"So, no count is dead?"
Opening the door, I climbed in. She did the same on the other side.
"So it would appear."
"And the woman is at the motel?"
"Yep, along with the grandson, Bass, later this afternoon."
"Are we bailing out the KGB guy and putting him at the Blue Gables, too?"
"Probably not."
"We could do it like an Agatha Christie. I suppose you're all wondering why I've called you here today."
I started my truck and headed north. "You miss a lot when you go home to bed."
"Didn't miss a night's sleep?"
She turned to gaze at me.
"You look like shit."
Negotiating the ramp at the edge of town, I eased onto I-90.
"Thanks."
She lodged her boots up on my dash.
"No, you really do."
I slipped on my sunglasses in an attempt at creditable appearance.
"Really, thanks."
She watched the early morning scenery whiz by as the sun rose, illuminating the mountains to my left and highlighting the small remainder of snow at their tops. After a while, I asked, "You okay?"
"Yeah."
She turned, looking straight ahead at the road.
"So Ruby's calling it quits?"
"We'd spoken about it a few times." I passed a group of lingering minivans in the right-hand lane.
"I think she's just tired."
"Yeah."
I glanced at her again.
"Are you sure you're all right?"
"Yeah.
I just liked having at least one other woman on the force." I drove on.
"Me too."
Chapter 12. The Sheridan County Sheriff was kind enough to loan us his interrogation room, so we did not have to look at Serge through plexiglass. Vic was enjoying posing in front of the two-way mirror.
"So this is what a real sheriff's department looks like?"
"Big sheriff's department." She vogued some more and then turned to look at me, her hand on her hip.
"So, Serge, kicked some guy in the head in a bar fight?"
"Just a little old-fashioned fun, some 19-year-old. I guess there was an altercation, and the kid swung at Serge, missed, slipped, and then fell to the ground. But Sheriff kicked him and, unfortunately, connected with the kid's head, knocked him out cold. From what Brandon told me, the kid woke up about 3 hours ago and decided not to press charges.
So, unless we discover something, Serge goes free after he talks to us.
Does he know that?
I don't think Carson has relayed that to him, no. The door jostled and then opened, revealing Serge Boshirov and the Sheridan County Sheriff, Carson Brandis, himself. The massive prisoner smirked upon seeing me and then held his belly chain handcuffs out to Carson. You want him loose?
Sure.
As Brandis uncuffed him, Boshirov smirked some more and then spoke in his adenoidal voice.
You are sure you handle me?
I turned to Vic. You got the rubber hose? She patted herself, coming up empty. I thought we were just going to kneecap him, but they took our weapons. He sat in the plastic chair across the metal desk from us and straightened his orange jumpsuit, and I had to wonder where Brandis had gotten one that big. The big and tall prisoner shop?
That would be a violation of my Geneva Convention rights.
You're not involved in an armed conflict, so the convention doesn't pertain to you. He looked uncertain.
I know that because I was actually in the military.
He looked even more uncertain.
Unlike you, I glanced up at Carson, I bet you've got better things to do.
He backed away, twirling the cuffs in one hand.
I did, but this is getting interesting.
I stared at the prisoner. I hear you've been doing a little head-kicking. He smirked.
I am bad man.
I heard the victim is 19 years old and half your size. He opened his hands in absolution.
My training, it kick in.
I shook my head and rolled my eyes for effect. Look, we can do this one of two ways.
Serge Boshirov, Militia VDV Spetsnaz, Specialny Otriad, Bistrova Reagirovania, Special Attaché to OMON, Units, Sober, Derek, and of course, KGB.
He sat there, crossing his arms and looking supremely satisfied with himself and his knowledge of the alphabet. I turned to Vic.
Sounds pretty impressive, huh?
She snorted, and he glanced at her and then back at me, perhaps not quite so sure of himself.
Serge, old buddy, I have good friends in the intelligence community, and I had them do a little digging on your background. And it wasn't too difficult in that everybody was willing to tell us what a piece of crap you are.
Pulling a manila folder from under my leg, I tossed it onto the table between us. He stared at it like it was a bowl of poisonous borscht, and then ran a hand through his hair.
What is you think you know?
Vic laughed. Enough to know that you are one major bullshit artist. She reached out and flipped open the folder, revealing his youthful arrest photo and reams of printed material. First off, you're not even Russian. You're Chechen. You were a driver for Ivan Gorinsky and Urus Martan, where he made a fortune for himself working meat import scams with the Russians and starving his own people. From there, you graduated to working for Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who made his fortune by taking over the energy giant Yukos during the Wild East period in the 90s. But then you got caught screwing his housekeeper and had to run for your life. She looked at him, showing up in Bulgaria, where you were arrested for stealing women's lingerie. He looked a little uncomfortable.
Underwears in great demand at that time.
She continued reading. Then, for some reason, you were released and made your way to Napoli, where you were once again detained for not paying import taxes on outgoing shipments.
It was drug charge.
Vic made a sound like a buzzer in a game show.
Beep, beep.
The detector test determined that is a lie, Goomba. Says here it was sex toys. Carson chuckled. Looking a lot less sure of himself, Boshirov mumbled,
Must be mistake.
I don't think so. The next time you surfaced in an official capacity was because of a child pornography ring in London. My, you are one greasy, slimy, worldly thug, aren't you?
Look.
Finally coming to rest in Baltimore as if that city doesn't have enough problems. And got yourself associated with Philippe Lehman as a driver and bodyguard by passing yourself off as ex-KGB.
You think what you wish.
Look, fuckwit, the Committee for State Security, or KGB, as the direct successor of Cheka, NKGB, NKVD, and MGB, was dissolved in 1991. What, you worked for all these agencies when you were 12?
Assassins can do trade any age.
Evidently, so can bullshit artists. She sat and then leaned back in her chair. You're a small-time driver and child pornographer who sells neon dildos, and I wouldn't touch you with a proverbial 10-foot pole.
She leaned forward and stared at him. "So, are you going to play ball, or are we going to ship you off to one of the multiple global organizations that would gladly hang you up by your gonads and use you for guard dog practice?"
He studied her for a good long while and then stammered,
What do you want to know?"
I stated it with as much matter-of-fact as I could.
"Who killed Philippe Lehmann?"
He stared at me, his eyes finally growing wide.
"If that's who you think was going to sweep in and get you out of this mess, then you've got some rethinking to do."
His voice wasn't much above a whisper.
"Philippe is dead?"
Vic glanced at me. That was pretty good, really.
It was.
Stanislavski-like, almost. Serge glanced at Carson, who nodded, and then looked back at the two of us.
"He is dead for true?"
"It would appear.
But who killed him?"
I stood and walked over to the mirror, but quickly turned to avoid the view.
"We had a chat about that, and funny enough, your name came up, at least until we dug up your past, which, as tawdry as it might be, hasn't included any acts of violence until now."
Serge sprang up.
"That cowboy boy, he crazy. I bump into him and he swing at me. He slip and fall, and as I was trying to get away, I happened to step on his head, but I not mean to kick him."
Carson stepped over and put a hand on Serge's shoulder, carefully but firmly.